This is the Bob Medic Podcast for January 28th, 2015. On today's episode, we plant a seed in your mind, which we do perennially or weekly.
He just took all the jokes.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Come on.
He's been nursing that for some time.
The Pop Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. In the booth today are
Bill,
Amanda,
Mike,
Crystal,
Jeremy.
I'm Brian. Crystal's back.
Woo-hoo!
Not killed by robots yet.
Maybe. Not for lack of effort on your part. I
my crystal slayers will work someday.
That's right. Parsley.
Geranium.
On this if you haven't guessed yet, on this week's show, we celebrate the Nashville Public Library's Seed Library and its launch at the downtown branch.
It's called Nashville Public Library Seed Exchange, you dingus.
It's been going strong, really popular at neighborhood branches. We're going to expand to the downtown branch. So in today's episode, plants, gardens, fruits, vegetables, heck, maybe even fungus. They're like half plant, half animal. Do you remember the segment we did about corn smut?
All right. So we the Poppy Matic Podcast this week.
We're gonna fertilize your mind.
You're the heroine. Who's the heroine of the Poppy Matic podcast?
Borrow seeds, grow plants, return seeds. That's it. That's NPL Seed Exchange. We kicked off last spring at 4 locations, and this year we've expanded to 10 libraries, including the main library. I'm Crystal, and I am your seed librarian. So let me tell you a little bit more about how this works. All you have to have is a library card. It's free to check out the seeds. You do have to go to a seed library location. So again, it's Maine, Bellevue, Bordeaux, Donelson, Edgehill, Edmondson Pike, Green Hills, Goodlettsville, Englewood, or Southeast. So you tell me, I've never grown anything. I don't know how to. Well, every seed library location has workshops to get you started. We're going to have seed starting workshops in February and March. Lots of plants need to be started indoors if you want to kick off your garden right. For instance, tomatoes. A lot of us buy tomato plants after tax day and put them in our garden. But why not check out some seeds right now? Start your seedlings indoors and then you're ready to plant after tax day. Some of the vegetables that we have, and in my opinion, these are the top five easiest to grow, bush beans. Those are the green beans. You can plant those directly in your garden in the spring. We have radishes. You plant those right now. They're a winter, spring, early spring crop. The tomatoes, start those indoor now for transplanting later. Who in this room likes fried okra?
I do.
I like fried anything, really. Yeah.
You can plant those seeds directly into the ground later this spring. How about some turnip greens?
Yeah.
It's okay. A hard sell in this room. But we have...
fried turnip greens?
Well, sure. Why not?
Load on the vinegar.
Indeed. So we have turnip seeds. You can grow them for the greens and for the turnips. And you can plant those now as well. So stop by one of the seed library locations. Check out some seeds. We'll have lots of gardening books on hand, too. And look out for those workshops. In April, I'm going to have a local insect expert to come to talk about beneficial insects in your garden. Mm. Be on the lookout for that. Be sure to go to NPL Seed Exchange's Facebook page, give us a like, and that's your go-to spot to find out about all things Seed Exchange. So any questions from the team?
Why didn't you correct me when I called it the Seed Library? Come on, I'm acting like a dingus.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow, so many callbacks.
It's not incorrect to call it the seed library, right? Because, I mean, the idea is you're supposed to get stuff and then grow it and bring it back, but there is no penalty if you can't. Like, if you're a failure at growing, if your thumb is more brown than green.
Exactly. Garden police are not going to come after you. No. Now, this is all honor system. There are no late fees. If you try to grow something and it just doesn't work, that's okay. Come check out some more seeds. Try again.
The world's not ending yet.
Not yet. Yeah. Oh, and I should mention we have non-GMO seeds. And do you all know what that means?
I was going to say, what does that
mean? Genetically modified organisms?
Exactly.
Ooh.
Our seeds.
Smart like that.
Our seeds are not genetically modified. We have a lot of heirloom varieties. Do you all know what heirloom varieties are?
I've always wanted to know.
Handed down from generation to generation?
Indeed.
That's what I was going to guess.
The rule of thumb.
I just negate my previous smartness by smartitude, by not knowing what heirloom means.
Smartitude. Heirloom varieties are generally, I believe the rule is they've existed for 50 years or more, and they're open pollinated, which means they can pollinate through the air or by insects. You don't have to get out there with your brush and take pollen from one plant to the other. Nature takes care of itself. We do have some hybrid varieties. Hybrid plants will produce great vegetables, but they will not ring true the following year, so you can't return hybrid seeds. But any of the heirloom varieties that you have success with, bring the seeds back in the fall. All right, Mike?
Speaking of bugs and things that burst from the ground, today I'm going to talk about Creepshow, 1982, directed by George Romero and written by Stephen King. Oh, boy. This is one of those things where, like, you know, toss up on the things that we, you know, that episode we did, like, last year about things we watch a bunch. Because, yeah, I've watched this a bunch. I have it on Blu-ray and DVD. And UK DVD that has 2 hours of special features. Ooh. HLA need to pick that one up.
Editor's note. As excited as we are that Mike has Creepshow in every format, including Betamax and Laserdisc, I'm sorry to report the library does not have access to this movie at this time. I'm recording this.
You dingus.
Anyway, Creepshow is a tribute to EC Comics in the 1950s and the kind of horror magazines in the 1970s, like Creepy and Eerie. Essentially an anthology film with 5 short stories with 1 big framing story. The framing story involves a boy played by Stephen King's real-life son who grew up to be Joe Hill, which he's still friends with Tom Atkins, the father guy, and he mentions him on Twitter sometimes, and it's like, every time, it's like, oh man, yeah, you know, Tom Atkins was, you know, also in Night of the Freaks, or Night of the Creeps, which is...
Night of the Creeps.
Yeah, yeah, throw me. let's see, to testify stories. One story is the lonesome death of Jordy Verrill, the reason why I'm mentioning it on this All Plant episode, haha. The meteorite crashes on a redneck's land somewhere in rural Maine. Said redneck played by Big Steve Stephen King himself. Hoping that the space rock will net him the vast riches, $200. Tries to touch it, which causes it to burst open and this weird fluid comes out. Ooh, everything around the space rock starts growing a weird kind of grass, but not just on the ground, but on like metal poles and telephones and stuff. Ooh. And Steve looks at his fingers and it's got weird white bumps on it. What does that mean?
Guess I'll drink a vodka screwdriver.
That's the only one where I can't find the ashtray. Did you hear about that? The ashtray from the first part is in every other part.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, once you know it, you can see it. Like the one with the roaches, it's right next to like his the trash thing. So you got a minute.
Something totally different, right?
Something completely different.
So, Creepshow 2.
Cat's Eye.
Maximum Overdrive.
I love Maximum Overdrive. Yeah, it's been a minute since I've seen it.
But it's not very good, but I still love
it. Oh, it's horrible. But he directs.
Hey, cooking. You cook with vegetables grown in your garden.
So, well, I've never been one to have a good garden. Like, my dad is really gifted with that, and I am really not. Like, I wouldn't even say my thumb is brown. I would say it's black.
I don't know if invented the brown thumb just
I don't,
now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds like something else.
So when we were looking at this, I came across an ebook that you can download off of Overdrive called Indoor Kitchen Gardening. And it's by Elizabeth Mallard. And I thought, okay, this will be cool. I can grow, you know, cilantro, and I can have parsley, and, you know, all this in my garden. I can just go out and cut it and cook great food. And so I'm sitting there reading it, and I get about 4 pages in, and I'm like, wait, I don't care about grow lights and temperature and room and what. I'm like, I don't want to do this. And that's for people like Crystal that have this, you know, that they can actually grow it. I want to be friends with those people so they can bring me herbs. And then I can spend my time reading books like this Hothouse Flower and the 9 Plants of Desire.
Oh.
I know.
Hey-o.
So this is a fiction book that is by Margot Berwin, B-E-R-W-I-N. And it is about a girl named Lila. She's in New York City, just gotten divorced, and has decided no plants, no pets, no problems. Like, she's just going to live by herself. And she's walking through the market one day, and she sees this guy, David Exley, and he has all these beautiful tropical plants, and he convinces her to buy this bird of paradise. So this kind of starts her down the path of learning about tropical plants and growing tropical plants, and then she comes across this magical laundromat on, I want to say it's First Avenue, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But it's got like all these beautiful tropical plants, and like all these people want to go in and see it, and you can do your laundry and see nice plants and get advice from the owner, Armand. Which in doing research, he's actually based on a real psychologist in New York, which I think the author was a client of. And so, like, she put him in this novel, and he's kind of the Obi-Wan Kenobi, and, like, he's very wise. And antics ensue, and she and Lila ends up on this quest in the Yucatan Peninsula. The 9 plants get stolen, because Armand has them, and then this Exley steals them, because the 9 plants, supposedly, if you have all 9 of them, they give you everything you could want. Like, it's immortal life, wealth, money. I mean, it's all kind of metaphors for things. Like, one is the chocolate plant, one is mandrake root, and all this, you know, real plants.
Chocolate plant?
Yeah, the cacao plant.
Oh, of course. I was like, wait, it's a plant?
It was a tree, I guess.
I'm growing that today.
Chocolate doesn't grow on trees.
I'm going to harvest me some Kit Kats.
I tell you, that would be awesome. Yeah. Kit Kat plant? Yeah. I would learn how to grow one of those.
Exactly.
I would take the time.
Ditto. This is my go-to butter farm.
I feel like the biggest idiot in the world right now. It's amazing. I love it.
So she has to, Lila has to end up having to go down to the Yucatan Peninsula to the rainforest and recover these 9 plants for Armand, who she has to put them back together. And so it was really compared to kind of like Eat, Pray, Love meets The Orchid Thief. For me, it really sounded like The Magicians by, I think it was Wes King. Is that the guy that?
Lev Grossman.
Yes, thank you. I was nowhere near that. Because it's like this has a real premise, but then there's like this magical element to it that gets kind of weird and freaky. Lila, you kind of have to take with a grain of salt. Like, she poisons the guy she's in love with. Mandrake root supposedly increases your libido, but if you give them too much, it stops their heart. And so she was mad at him, and so she gave him a whole bunch because she wanted to make him love her, and so then she about killed him, and so then she had to try to save the day.
It's an ideal situation. You get what you want, and then they die. Yep.
Yeah, so...
Twilight Zone, all right.
Yeah, so it was a good book. There's a rumor going around that Julia Roberts has optioned this to make a movie and is working on a film adaptation, but there's no release date posted, so... Who knows? In the meantime, that's the way I like my plant. A little bit of immortal life, chocolate.
You gotta work hard, though, to get chocolate from a plant.
You really do. Let's... Like, they had the process for it in the book, and, like, it
that's
takes, like... Yeah, and, like, you know, you might not even do it right the first time. Yeah. It might just have gritty nastiness. Like, you have to figure it out. So I'm like, I'll just go to the store and buy it.
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
All right, Mr. Bill.
Have you ever seen a plant called a triffid? According to Wikipedia, the triffid is a fictitious, tall, mobile, prolific, and highly venomous plant species. They're also carnivorous. Where do you find the triffids? In The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham, which is the 1951 post-apocalyptic science fiction novel. Hopefully you've never seen the plant. However, I highly recommend the novel, which has been in publication since 1951. The basic premise is a meteor shower has occurred, and the next morning everyone has come blind from watching the meteor shower, leaving plenty of triffid food. The hero of the piece is Bill Mason, who was in the hospital at the time with bandages over his eyes after being splashed with triffid poison. interesting to note that the movie 28 Days Later and the TV show The Walking Dead have used similar openings in their respective shows. I read the book several years ago and was always impressed how John Wyndham made everything realistic. Another reason why I love the book is the ambiguous ending. This is a fun fact about the book. Do you realize that the Soviet Union was using radiation in experiments with plants? And this gave John Wyndham the inspiration to write the book. Even though the book was written in Cold War paranoia, I still find it very relevant today. The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham. Jeremy.
Well, this topic planted a little seedling in my mind, and it has since grown thick, sticky buds about my home state of Kentucky. Is the epicenter. My home state, Crystal, your home state of Kentucky, is the epicenter of vice, or everyday vice in the world, in the United States at least. So if you like gambling, we got you a horse race first Saturday in May. If you like booze, you can go to a distillery and get you some fine brown bourbon.
Some Buffalo Trace at home. Buffalo, my name
Hell yeah, Buffalo Trace made around the corner from my parents' house in Frankfort, Kentucky.
People invited me for cornholing, and I was like, I don't want to know what that means.
Yeah, it means it means what you think it means.
Oh my!
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It's a fun game.
When you're at a family reunion and your grandmother says, "Hey, they're cornholing out
there." Yeah, they're all like, reputable, nice people in public are like, "Hey, Mike, you want to go cornholing?" I'm like,
"Hey, they painted L8 on their cornhole." Say what?
Mine's got the Wildcats on it.
Yeah. So anyway,
frat boys do it a lot.
That's true. Hey-o. Also, if you're a Marlboro man, here's a Marlboro man, because we got the tobacco. But so these are all pretty harmless diversions and perfectly legal and righteous. But if your tastes run a little more illicit, if you're a displaced Coloradan looking for a Rocky Mountain High, Kentucky can help you there too. So to people my dad would call heads, the Bluegrass State has a reputation for high-quality marijuana, and the book The Cornbread Mafia tells the story of how a small town in Kentucky became the epicenter for one of the biggest pot busts in U.S. history. There was a man named Johnny Boone, and more than 100 other people were arrested for growing 182 tons of marijuana on 29 farms in 10 different states. And the author, James Higdon, details the origins of this deliciously named group and how they started a brief empire in Washington, Nelson, and Marion counties in central Kentucky. And this author has the distinction of being the very first journalist subpoenaed by the Obama administration due to his relationship with Johnny Boone and the interviews that he conducted. The story sort of gives a background on vice in Kentucky, from like people running booze during Prohibition to juke joints. The song Lucille that Little Richard performed is allegedly based on some woman in Lebanon, Kentucky, who ran a bar there. And it was a really interesting book. And it also made me think of another famous Kentuckian named Gatewood Galbraith, who was a perennial gubernatorial candidate, hemp advocate, who hung out with Woody Harrelson, and people that I was friends with, their parents voted for him for governor. So check out Cornbread Mafia if you like gangsters without shirts on.
And Justified.
Oh, yeah, and Justified, which I've never seen. I've never seen
it. Raylan Givens.
Yeah. So, Brian, what have you?
I think it is kind of weird that no one talked about the Orchid Thief or adaptation.
Amanda.
You mentioned it.
And I'm even more surprised that the twin nerd boys didn't talk about Swamp Thing. So I'm going to talk about Swamp Thing.
I was always more into Man Thing. Thank you very much. That's right. Or I've got that Kryptonite that kills plants, which saves Superman and whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
I have the origin of Man Thing in my bag.
So I was going to talk about Volume 2 of Swamp Thing, which many of you might know that's where Alan Moore really made his name in comics. And during this particular run of Swamp Thing, it's the first time that DC said forget it with the Comics Code Authority. I'm just going to give one shout out in particular. Swamp Thing Volume 2, number
34.
Swamp Thing and his girlfriend, Abby, right? They can't have sex because he's like Plant Man, right? Mm-hmm. But he grows these tubers, and then she eats one, and she goes on this psychedelic trip into the plant consciousness. Amazing. Just let yourself go there. I love that issue. It's called Rites of Spring. The editor, Karen Berger, let Alan Moore, you know, hey, do what you want. You know, do what you want with this title. And then he curated something amazing. And then, of course, he's went on to become one of the most successful authors, you know, alive. And then I think it's worth noting that Berger also gave a start in comics to someone named Neil Gaiman on a comic called Sandman. Thank you, Karen Berger, for giving me Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman.
Psychedelic tubers.
We're 18 minutes for Tickle My Fancy. Okay, Bill, you want to start?
On Friday, January 16th, 2015, a new show premiered on the Sci-Fi Channel called 12 Monkeys. And it seemed Earth has been ravaged by a plague caused by a man-made disease. I'm really bleak today.
A time traveler,
James Cole, played by Aaron Cole, goes back in time and tries to stop the plague. Do you realize that in 1995, Terry Gilliam directed a film version of 12 Monkeys, and that's what's tickling my fancy today? It stars Bruce Willis, Madeline Stowe, Brad Pitt, Christopher Plummer, and to me, it's Terry Gilliam struck the right chord, the right balance of visuals, acting, and story. Sometimes I feel he goes a little too overboard on the visuals, but this one I think he just struck the perfect balance. I also recommend the short movie which we have in our collection by Chris Marker called La Jetée. I'm sure I'll get corrected on that next week's show.
La Jetée.
La Jetée, thank you. Do it now. Which is also in our collection, which became basis for the movie 12 Monkeys. So, and now it's a television show. I'm not highly recommending the show yet. Well, I've only seen one episode, but I watched it, and I'll probably watch another one just to see if I want to invest my time in it. But I highly recommend 12 Monkeys, the Terry Gilliam film. Amanda?
So sometimes when, you know, after you get done watching Bill's bleak movie choices, you just want something that's going to be entertaining and fun and a quick read. Yeah,
after a good cry.
Well, you might need a good cry.
Yeah.
So I am currently reading a series by Nora Roberts. This is the Stanislavski series. And I had downloaded one. We have them all on Overdrive to download the ebook. And I think we have the print books too. They're a little older. She wrote them in the 90s. There are six books in the series. And I actually read the sixth one first, called Considering Kate, not realizing it was part of a series. So it is based on the Stanislavski family. They are Ukrainian, they immigrated from the Ukraine. They had to escape Russia via a wagon, and they came to the United States. They live in New York. Apparently, they're all really good looking, which doesn't that work out nicely? And so it's the story of their family, and it kind of goes like, considering Kate is the daughter, and then if you go back, the first one is called Tammy Natasha, and she's Kate's mom, which that gets a little awkward. Maybe not if you read them in order, but when you read Kate first and then go backwards, it's kind of.
Oh,
yeah, wow. It's like, okay, all right.
Taming mom.
But they are, I started these last Wednesday, and I've already read three of them. So, I mean, they're pretty quick reads. They're enjoyable. They're probably not going to change your life. But if you need a little bit of escapism, definitely check them out. All right, Mike.
This weekend was actually a pretty good one for movies for me, three which I could easily recommend. But I could, you know, just picture Brian having a stroke and eyeball popping out of his face. If I went through that again, so I just pick one.
You went pretty long with
Yeah, I went pretty long twice. And
it was like a
month.
Jeremy style rant.
Yeah, no. Who wants to do that? Plant pun.
So you know, we are in a room full of Stephen King fans, so I let it.
I let you guys.
You know, what's the, I'm looking for a plant metaphor for like.
Let you guys proliferate.
All bark and no bite.
His seed germinate.
Whoa.
I was going to say blossom, but
it's like bloom, yeah.
Bloom. I didn't trim you back.
No pruning.
What's that called when like a seed explodes and stuff goes everywhere?
Allergies.
Oh, yeah. Allergies.
Yeah, it's spring. Anyway, this week I'll talk about a horror slash thrill that came out last year called The Guest, which we just got on DVD. I was like second in the queue. I was like, yeah. And it, by the time this comes out, it will have been at the Bell Court, so hopefully you saw it then. If not, we have it. Stars Dan Stevens, who's apparently some dude on Downton Abbey. Stars as David, a soldier who just returned from Afghanistan. he goes to see his friend Caleb's family, who had died overseas. Caleb's last wish was for David to tell them that he loved them all. The family becomes so entranced by him that they invite him to stay for a couple of days, but as the movie progresses, it gradually becomes more and more clear that something is off about David. It's really cool. It's a very clever throwback to 80s movies, one movie in particular, but I can't say it because it spoiled the crap out of the last act. But very good. You know, the soundtrack is amazing. It's not like actual 80s. It's like a tribute. I think it's called either synth pop or retro synth. That kind of like, you know, it's made now, but it's like in an 80s style. It's directed by Adam Wingard and written by Simon Barrett, who both worked on the excellent You're Next, which I quite enjoyed. So, but yes, what have you got, Crystal?
All right, a couple of music things are really tickling my fancy. First, my new favorite band, The Future Islands, performed on Austin City Limits. If you missed it on PBS, you can watch it online, so go check out that. He does some fabulous dance moves. Secondly, D'Angelo and the Vanguard's Black Messiah. It's been tickling my fancy since it dropped by surprise back in December. It is available for download on Freegal, but type in a keyword search on D'Angelo and the Vanguard. If you just search D'Angelo, you're not going to find it. Essential track is Sugar Daddy. That's my jam. It's got a badass piano riff that just carries the whole song through. And lastly, Saturday, January 31st, D'Angelo and the Vanguard are the musical guest on Saturday Night Live. J.K. Simmons is hosting, so I'll be tuning in, and you better too. All right, Jeremy.
Oh, wow.
Snap.
You got it! Yeah. Yeah, very nice.
So I'm a big Elvis Costello fan and have used him as a seed from which to grow plants, from which to pluck
chocolate.
And one of the morsels that the first morsel to sprout up from that plant is Nick Lowe.
New puns.
Is that. this is good times. Is Nick Lowe. Nick Lowe, years and years have been enjoying his music and have always, not always, but have been listening to him for a long time and have lately just been listening to him almost nonstop. Specifically, his first two albums, Jesus of Cool, which was his first album, which in the U.S. was called Pure Pop for Now People, because Jesus. And his second album, Labor of Lust. Both are excellent. I know at least Labor of Lust is available through the library. He's great, so check it out. Check it out. You dingus.
I was waiting. I was like, you're just gonna close straight. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe you were gonna close straight.
Nick Blow.
All right. Anyone have any thoughts about the Oscar or Golden Globe nominations?
The Lego movie was cheated.
Nightcrawler. I was disappointed awesome. About that.
Yeah. I can't believe Brendan Gleeson didn't get one for Calvary.
Calvary. Yeah.
I wanted to see that movie.
Oh, it is.
And don't forget the Babadook.
I know. S.C. Davis. It's an outrage.
It really was in her case.
Yeah. You know, because
she was awesome.
Awesome.
I thought Tom Hardy was really good in Locke.
Yeah, that's true. That, yeah.
Especially since he had to do it all by himself, pretty much.
Yeah. That's true. I forgot about him. That was a good performance.
I don't think indie movies usually get the attention that they deserve from the Oscars.
Well, this year, Boyhood is doing pretty good.
Jeez Louise.
That was my lead, and like I was really super surprised because Linklater's kind of anti-Hollywood establishment, and I was really surprised that they gave him props for making a movie that he kind of made on his own.
Uh-huh. And it's an IFC film. Yeah. Movie. Yeah.
And I was really super excited that Patricia Arquette got nominated for, I think it might have been like Best Supporting Actress for the Golden Globes for that movie, because I kind of felt like she was the best part of that movie. And I enjoyed that movie a lot. I thought it was good. I do think the way that they shot it, though, was just kind of a gimmick and a stunt. I've seen many like movies about growing up and you don't have to shoot it that way. You can just get a young actor and then an older actor with the same colored hair and through the magic of Hollywood, it works.
Yeah, but the point is that it's not that, that it's like a real, it's a real thing.
I think if it was shot conventionally, it would not be the big deal that it is.
I think you're probably right, but...
Was the effect any different than a conventional movie?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
Because they grew, you know, the characters, too.
Yeah, because it's not just the boy, it's every, it's like every person. Like,
that was the impressive thing about
it. Yeah, I didn't think they really called attention to it. Like, it's just sort of, it's like you're paying attention to it because you know about it just from... Mm-hmm. Like, if I had seen it sight unseen and I was like, wait a second, they're noticeably older. Like, I don't know if I would have paid any attention to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's why it doesn't matter. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Exactly.
Thus saith the Brian.
It wasn't noticeable.
Wrong. Next issue.
It is noticeable.
Wrong.
If it is noticeable, it takes you out of the movie, then it's a failure. That was the wrong aesthetic choice. And if you don't notice, there's no reason to do it that way. Hmm. Interesting experiment. That's all I'm saying. Well, it was a great movie.
I didn't want to see it, really. I just went to see it this past Sunday, and I went in totally negative, going, oh, I'm going to hate this, you know, because I really don't like Linklater stuff. Yeah. I mean, and I came out, oh, well, I became a convert. I thought, man, you know, it really... thought about it, and I thought what you say too about a stunt and stuff, but I think you put heart and soul and it would be different.
Yeah.
You know, I love the seamless way it was just done. It didn't go like age 16.
it seemed like less of a stunt because later. It did have the heart.
You just kind
of
go
bit, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think because of the shooting style too, it couldn't have like a conventional plot per se.
Oh, well,
so that's why yeah. like you know.
Once again,
I think that's what people really like about it. They kind of see.
That's
themselves.
Like his movies though. A lot of his movies.
And I just think it worked better in this one.
The plot thing, that's like all his movies, or most of his movies, right? Yeah. You know, his auteur-esque movies that other people don't write.
Days of Confused.
You know,
never seen one of his movies.
I like that.
Have you seen Days of Confused?
Nope.
It's really funny, man.
I've seen Bernie, and I did not like it.
You didn't like Bernie?
I'm like the only person on Earth who did not like Bernie.
I really did like that.
You should watch Waking Life. It's probably his best movie. Anyway, okay.
School of Rock.
I like School of Rock. Oh, well then.
See, I didn't like School of Rock.
And even though I liked Boyhood,
yeah,
I thought...
those damn kids.
What about you, Fancy Pants?
I don't want to feel like I'm knocking Boyhood too much. I really enjoyed it. I just thought the way that he did it was a gimmick, and I think it's getting more credit than it deserves because he shot it that way. Mm. Because I think that story has been told many times before. You know, the adolescent male coming of age in America. Yeah, I get it.
I actually thought it was less interesting the older that he got. Like once he became like the sort of angry teenager, I was like, I don't
care anymore. Like the last half hour was just like, ugh.
I still enjoyed it, but it was like, I hate teenagers.
See,
I hated being a teenager.
Well, I did too. But the thing about it, just took the snippets.
Yeah.
When it was interacting with the adults.
How about them plants?
And here's the other thing. Like some of the really dramatic things are passed over and not in the plot. But the one that was very much like shot in the movie is when, you know, she leaves her abusive husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
she
leaves the stepkid there.
Yeah.
Like, they show that scene, but then some of the other really dramatic scenes, like, are not shot. And, like, I would wonder, like, what Linklater's thought was, like, when he was writing the script. Okay, we're going to shoot this moment, but not this moment. That's fascinated
by
that.
Like, how the corrections officer husband, you didn't see them split up, you mean? Like that?
Yeah, for instance,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I wonder if that was just like a
practice. It just seemed like suddenly it went from nice marriage to, oh, he's a controlling jerk like the last guy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That was quick.
that drunken scene where the guy's smashing the glasses like...
La, la, la,
sorry.
La, la, la.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, no, yeah. That's right.
No, I don't want to. No. It's making me think of One Day by David Nichols. I don't know if... Amanda, have you read that?
That sounds familiar to me.
Of course, they made the movie with...
Anne Hathaway.
It's just, you see this one day every year in their relationship, and then you kind of have to, you know, sort of guess what has happened in between.
questions. I think the only thing that we kind of got wrong, you said Peter Yates' The Robbery was filmed in 1960, and that wasn't possible because the actual robbery took place in 19...
Well, I meant 68.
There you go.
That's pretty close.
I wrote down...
Same decade.
Or 67, I forget. It was the one that Steve McQueen looked at to make Bullet. He said, oh, I want him to direct Bullet.
Peter Yates' version of The Robbery is filmed in 1967.
67.
For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam.
Next week, African American History Month. Be there. Maybe, or should I say, be here.
Good morning, Bill. Jordy Farrell, you idiot.
$200
$200.
Not fair, too.
Awesome.
Then,
this will be the best episode.
I remember seeing that on Thanksgiving Day when that line came up. Everybody went, woo!
We've got tons of time, don't we? Father's Day. Haha. You know, a guy meets his girlfriend's family for the first time on Father's Day, but it turns out that day is also the anniversary of her great aunt murdering her father. Surely nothing would go wrong.
It's Father's Day.
And I want my cake. It's notable for a pre-fame Ed Harris with hair and laughable dancing skills.
Absolutely.
Don't let go.
Don't let go.
We should have a dramatic reading.
It's like Rocky Horror Picture Show, but it's a great show.
I get that song stuck in my head sometime.
Don't let go. Don't let go.
Oh, man. I want a creature of the past. This is amazing.
This is one of my favorite movies, dude. I just couldn't keep it in.
Yeah, I think Bill says it's like your favorite movie, which is kind of amazing. So it's like, you know. Oh, wow. It's in my top five.